The following podcast is scheduled for one fall. One fall!
It's almost time for a new chapter of Geek Catch-Up to start. But before it does, Chris and I wanted to take a moment to send our love and appreciation out to all of you for choosing to hang out with us. If you enjoy Geek Catch-Up, then make sure to slam that subscribe button and help us level up the show by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
You can also find us on social media to get updates on all things GK, interact directly with us, and content from the world of geekery. Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter, links to all of which can be found in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com.
If you'd like to support the shoe, there's even links to our Square shop where you can find official GK merchandise like shirts and stickers. And Patreon, if extra content is your thing. Above all, though, the absolute best thing you can do is spread the love for the world of geekery by sharing the Geek Catch-Up podcast with your friends and family.
Now get ready to enjoy today's show, and as always, remember to stay saucy.
If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Catch-Up Podcast.
What's good, Geek Catch-Up family? I'm Chris Heck.
And I'm Kyle Eckert.
And you are listening to Season 3, Chapter 47. Today, we're expanding our Geekverse out just a little further as we welcome a newcomer to the show. That person is indeed streamer, voice actor, and all-around nerdy guy, Mick Davis. We'll chat with him about his Twitch and YouTube channels, how he got into doing voice work, and of course, what he's been geeking out on lately. So let's get right to it. Mick, how are you doing today?
I am fantastic. How are you?
Great. Yeah, thanks for joining us.
I feel like I've been waiting my entire life, really, to talk to you guys. And I feel like we're old friends as much as I've listened to the show and talked to our good mutual friend, Alex. I feel like I've been here the whole time. So
nice.
But very excited for it. Very, very excited.
Yeah, we're pretty pumped to have you. It does feel like we've known you because we do know you through Alex Santalosi, who's been on the show before with our Falcon and Winter Soldier episode, but it's nice to finally get you on and actually have a chat about all things nerdy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If there's one thing that I can do is definitely talk about all things nerdy. That's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like I'm sure that Alex sometimes, especially because we both spend so much time, you know, just sitting in the chair getting pummeled by her tattoo gun, you know, she probably gets all of both sides. So she's like, she knows everything about me and what I'm into. She knows everything about you, what you're into, because everybody always, you know, sits there and just spews everything to their tattoo artist while you're getting,
oh, yeah,
getting buzzed.
It's kind of like, you know, it's a method of torture, really. I mean, I think it's maybe the CIA should consider just tattooing people when they want to get information. But I do want to make sure I say, because it is true, Alex is the absolute best.
Mm-hmm.
And we do not deserve her in this world because she is too good and too pure. So I know she's listening. So hi, Alex.
Takes care of all of us. We can give her the shout out, you know, Iron Ghost tattoos. If you're in the Carolinas, cannot go wrong.
Absolutely.
But yeah, torture is a fun way to put it. I always call it therapy, so I think maybe moving forward I'm going to call it torture therapy.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, yeah.
It feels like it's getting really close to BDSM there, Chris.
Hey, you know, different strokes move the world, you know? You never know.
I'm sure somebody's crossed those lines together, let's just be honest.
Very, very likely.
Definitely a category on some sort of website.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, Mick brought our podcast into the TVMA realm. Yeah.
Rated mature.
Yes. Good stuff, good stuff. Well, always a great way to kick it off is a chance to share where you can be reached, because I know you've got a Twitch stream, you've got a YouTube channel, so why don't you just give a quick call out on where the listeners can find you if they're interested.
Jeez, I feel like I'm all over the internet in so many places because I am. So Twitter at Mick Arcade. The biggest one, twitch.tv/Mick Arcade. I am on Instagram as well. But unfortunately, it is that Mech Arcade because someone took the standard Mech Arcade and they don't use it, which is the worst part. Is like it's completely blank. So I'm going to get it one day and change it over. I am on YouTube. That's where you can find my reel. You search Mech Arcade, you'll find me. Or if you go to Twitter or Instagram, there's my link tree. And obviously, it'll link you there. I'm also part of a very good-sized D&D group on Twitch called Fateful Encounters, and you can find us at twitch.tv/fateful_encounters. And we are there 4 days a week. I'm there two, typically, three more than not, but it's 4 days a week, Mondays through Thursdays. We stream at 7:30 Central Time, and it's a good time all the time.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
I don't think I forgot anything. I probably did, but it's okay.
Got the bulk of it out there. You got the bulk of it.
Yeah, yeah. The meat and potatoes, if you will.
Yeah, I saw that you had the Fateful Encounters, and maybe we can jump into that real quick, because I thought it was super interesting. But how did you catch up with that group? I mean, you might hear it all the time, so if it's blasphemy, I apologize. But it had some serious Critical Role vibes when I was checking out the account. And just maybe to help for the listener kind of gauge, you know, what we're talking about, but what is it and how did you all come together?
So Fateful's actually been going for over a year before I got involved.
Okay.
And I got involved through a friend, through another friend, via Twitch. It was a situation where Fateful was looking to kind of expand what they were doing. They wanted to add some new faces, and they initially asked me to come on and do a guest spot. So I did that. I played basically a ripoff of Captain Barbossa from Pirates of the Caribbean. And it was a lot of fun. The highlight from that particular stream is I straight up pulled the bit from Princess Bride, the dread pirate, Roberts comes for your souls. Yes. So I like my character sets himself on fire and intimidated a bunch of guards because he was a tiefling. So you don't die from fire.
Okay.
So that was kind of me dipping my toe into the Fateful pool. And then from there, I did another one-shot appearance where I played a tribal chieftain who was basically Korg from Thor Ragnarok.
Nice.
And that was a lot of fun. The biggest highlight from that one was where he introduced, he challenged the players to do a like different trials to see if they were worthy in joining the tribe. And they had to climb a cliff, which I told them the name of which was, and literally every time I would say the cliff, I would just turn off mic and scream as loud as I could. And it was, they came up with the name because it's what the sound that you make when you fall off of it. So they thought it was something that would help you stick in your memory to know where you want to meet. So that was a lot of fun. But from there, officially joined the crew, and now I am part of the Curse of Strahd campaign. I play a rogue assassin who is an angry stab boy, and on Thursdays I am one of the co-hosts of a show we call The Deck of Many Fates. It's kind of like a variety show where we do games with chat, like D&D related games. We do that.
Nice.
We do a segment that we call Wisdom Check, where we'll talk about different rules. We'll talk about different mechanics that we like, don't like. There's four of us that kind of co-host the show. So usually like two of us pick one side and the other two pick the other side and we just argue.
Sure.
And then I am the main host on that. There's a lot of segments on that show, but I'm the main host for a segment called Fateful Origins, where I interview each individual member of Fateful Encounters and kind of ask, how did you get into D&D? How did you get into tabletop, you know, video games? And just to give our community an opportunity to know the players a little bit, you know, a little bit better, because we have such a fantastic community. I can't say enough good things, and they are the best meme makers in the world. We actually have a section in the Discord where while we're going through our various campaigns, like our Monday campaign, which is Fate's Fortune, Strahd, our Wednesday campaigns tend to be like one shots.
Okay,
like with,
so you mix it up throughout the week.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's definitely something for everyone 4 days of the week. But as we're going through the campaign and you get in our Discord, we have a section for memes, and we have some wizards just pumping out just quality content.
That's awesome.
That's how I knew I was a success in life, when somebody made a meme off of something stupid I did in a D&D game. You know, I made it, Ma. We did it.
There it is. That's the dream, man.
It is the dream. I mean, you know, working full-time in voice acting? Nah. Memes? Yeah.
Yeah.
2021, you know?
Oh, yeah. Right. That was the goal. Be memed. And I have been. It's good stuff.
That's pretty sweet, though. I mean, just kind of stumbling your way in there. Like I said, we expanded our Geekverse here. Sounds like you got your way in through your Geekverse, and you're doing a ton of different things. I like the idea of like elevated high school debate club.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That is, you nailed it. That is basically what it is. But like filthy.
Yeah.
Because we drop so many F-bombs. The ongoing joke for the show is our kind of intention is to get Fateful Encounters canceled, because that is just, it's gonna happen eventually. We say a lot of really dumb things on that show, so it's like a constant quest at this point.
Looking for the ban.
Yeah, it's gonna happen. That's one awesome. Of these days.
That's fantastic. Yeah, get memed and then get canceled.
Yes.
That's how you make it in 2021.
That's how you know you have succeeded in life, is when you get memed and then get canceled. And then if you make your triumphant return, you're a legend.
Yep.
Yeah, we haven't had any of those three yet, Kyle, so I think we've got a long way to go.
It's early.
It is.
It's early.
We're only 2 years
nothing publicly. We memed, I think we memed you privately.
That's true.
In the Retro Sports League Challenge when you got your ass handed to you by the Browns.
never released it.
Yeah, we never released that. Never released that.
But it doesn't count when you meme yourself. That's just like boomer mentality.
It's like giving yourself a nickname. It's like, it's there, but everybody knows that you did it, so it's just not quite the same.
Exactly. So you play characters, clearly. You also DM, though, right?
I am not DMing currently. I did DM for a couple of years. I DM'd a campaign in person with a group of my friends. Pandemic hit, obviously, so we shifted to doing everything online. And then life kind of got in the way. Things fell through. So that campaign kind of fell to the wayside, stopped doing it. Started another campaign with a group of Twitch friends. And similar thing, where it's like we were doing it, but life stuff started to get in the way, so it just became difficult to run. But I did DM for about 2 years. Now I'm just a player, which is nice. It is a nice break for sure, because DMing is a lot of work, and nobody thanks you for it, ever.
I could see that. We joined a new group, and we were actually just talking in our last chapter with our buddy Alex, who is our DM, and he just kind of up and said, hey, at the beginning of the year, I'd like to try it, and I think we kind of called his bluff in a way. We were like, well, if you want to try it, we want to play. So we kind of just like made it happen. But, you know, like, you can definitely tell that it's multiple hours a week in preparation, you know, for the session to make sure that everything is good and ready. And I've said to him before, like, it's so intriguing. Like, I want to try my hand at it. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know if I have the time to commit to that, because it's so much easier just to show up and play.
Oh, for sure. One of my friends, Jen, has a podcast called Overly Prepared DM that I recommend to anyone and everyone to listen to if they're interested in being a DM, because they have such great advice. It's a fun listen, so highly recommend checking that out just to see if it is something you want to do. One thing that I love to do is just kind of run a module and change some stuff. So like Curse of Strahd or Ghost of Saltmarsh or a bunch of others that I can't think of the names right now, but they're out there. That's what I do, is just, I'll just change a few things and just kind of run it out of the book. And, you know, that helped a lot in terms of prepping, because I would do like hours of writing. I'll never forget. I gave my players three options that I had crafted, all these things that could happen and options, and they chose none of them.
Oh, yeah.
It's the way it goes. That's the way it goes. For me, I think I'd just like to be a consultant. I think of our buddy Alex, like he's doing a bit of homebrew stuff in preparation for a third campaign he's going to launch. I'm like, I'll just be a nice little consultant when you need ideas to bounce off of. So I don't have to do any of the organizing, any of the preparing, none of the actual running of the game, but I get to help build his world.
Yep.
Which is kind of the best part for me.
It's like a producer credit, you know? Yeah, it feels good. You know, it's like, what did you do? Well, you know, I kind of made it happen. Like,
yeah.
without making it happen. No, DMs are truly miracle workers. So to your friend Alex, I'll say it because I'm not in your campaign, but I'll say it, Alex. Thank you. Thank you for everything you do. You are truly a king.
Definitely appreciate that.
It's true. We try to thank him, if not on Tuesday nights when we close, Wednesday morning, be like, dude, you're crushing it.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, keep that energy up and never think he's trying to kill you purposely. He might be, but you know.
Yeah, one time early on, after we really kind of settled in and was like, okay, I'm really feeling D&D is something we're going to do long term. I did send him a large like D20 die that's got like red skulls. It's like really, nice. Really gnarly. And I was like, I know this is going to cause me pain, but thank you. That was like the one time I sent him a thank you. And I was like, murder us with this evil
please
die.
Kill us with this. No, DMs really do the Lord's work, you know. They really do.
It's true. Well, keeping the D&D train going here, like as you have DM'd and developed worlds over the years, are there any characters that you've developed that you just really enjoy or you're really fond of? Maybe it's your Captain Barbossa.
Yeah, definitely. So I had a helpful NPC. There's two, actually, from the first campaign I ever did. I had a helpful NPC that was kind of the party is completely lost and they've gone in a bunch of terrible directions. I need to kind of right them. So I created this half drow blood hunter named Zalmov. And he was like literally the coolest dude alive. He had like the vampire hunter D hat. Oh, he used a katana. Nice. Like he had a really cool voice. He was just a badass. So I really enjoyed him just because like every time he would show up, it was always around the time of a really big, intense fight or battle. So that was always good. Or he would give them some good energy or just tips of like, hey, this is where you need to go. This is what you need to do. And so I really enjoyed him. And on the other end of that, I made a antagonistic NPC who was named, he was a gnome. And he was named Lario Silverhand, but the party called him Crazy Larry. Because he was basically always trying to screw them over. Like he offered to give them a ride on his boat that he actually stole from a band of orcs and then blamed it on them. He tried to blow them up at a dam. I mean, it was just like literally he would always show up and they wanted to kill him, but they couldn't because they needed him to do something to help them. So it was great. He did eventually die and they actually like buried him and had a ceremony and it was kind of like we hated this guy but we also respected the hustle.
He was our right. guy.
Yeah, he was our guy. He may have been Crazy Larry, but he was our Crazy Larry. Yeah. So yeah, it was great.
One of those moments where they pour one out for him at the exact same time they go like,
yeah.
Yep. No, absolutely. Yeah, it was something else. They didn't believe he was dead when he died, actually. Like, he had gotten set on fire and by, like, the big bad evil guy. And they didn't think he was dead, so one of the players cut his leg off because he's like, I know he's faking. He didn't die this time. Because he had, like, died, like, four times at this point.
Yeah.
I'm gonna chop his head off, stab him in the heart, set him on fire.
Yeah, I cut his leg off just to make sure he's dead. And it's like, yeah, he's actually dead. You just mutilated him.
That's funny.
No resurrections this time.
No, he was done.
I don't think I would have expected, nor have I heard anybody say that their favorite characters were NPCs, but I feel like hearing you talk about that, especially maybe from more of a DM perspective, like it immediately dawned on me that that would be fantastic because you can literally do anything with an NPC.
Oh, yeah. I you know, I neglected another one of my favorite from the same campaign. So there was... leads up into the character. One of the players was a ranger, and they were trying to get information. This was when they were playing the Curse of Strahd module, and they're in Barovia, which is, you know, basically like spooky, scary skeleton town. And one of the ranger decides, like, well, can I use speak to animals? I had not planned for this at all, so I was like, sure. There's a crow right there. So they start talking to this crow, and, you know, as the DM, I do voices and things like that. And like the party stops me after I made it like, you know, maybe 5 minutes in. They're like, wait a minute. Is this crow Michael Keaton? because I was basically doing like a Beetlejuice voice inadvertently. I was like, oh, yeah, it kind of is. And then to keep with that train, his name was Michael Corvid. And then he also he had a friend who was a seagull named Christopher Squawken, who came and also gave the party information. And then there was, this leads to the other favorite character, they met a very helpful goose by the name of Goose Willis.
Nice.
Goose Willis. Our friend Alex actually made me Goose Willis.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so he's awesome. he's got the little sweater from Die Hard. Yes. It says, ho, 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 now I have a machine gun.
That's amazing.
And I just said like 20 times, I was like, come out to the lake, we'll have a few laughs. You know, it was... some of the most ridiculous, like I even got more ridiculous. I made a crane named Whoopi, like, no, it was Michael Crane. And then, I made a whooping crane named Whoopi. So it was ridiculous. At that point, I realized I'd gone too far with DMing. I was like, all right, you know, this is ridiculous. But no, I have a lot of love for NPCs like that, 'cause you can be creative and ridiculous and really let your players have a fun time. A character I played recently on Fateful Encounters, I played a necromancer named Romero Savini, and he was Nicolas Cage from National Treasure. Like, I just did a Nick Cage impersonation for, like, 3 weeks, and he had a giant reveal that he was originally a bard named Mariadoc Banilow, or Mary Banilow, to his friends, and he was basically Barry Manilow, and... His girlfriend died, and he resurrected her, and her name was Mandy. And so that's what I do. Anytime I do a one shot, I just make like the most ridiculous character I can think of. And this most recent time was Nick Cage from National Treasure. I just kept saying, "I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence." And the DM was just like, "What? We don't. What else? What is a Declaration of Independence?" I'm like, "I know it's here. Where is it?" Like, it was a blast.
Oh, that's awesome. You're giving me like character envy now, because you know, we're still so new. I do play two games, but we haven't done any one shots or anything where I could really go that crazy. So now I'm over here, I'm like, man, I think, Kyle, we need a one shot in our life soon.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Do one shots, because if I had to do an ongoing campaign as Nicolas Cage, I would lose my mind. Because it's funny when it's just like a one shot and you're like, okay, he's probably going to die or it's going to end in like 2 weeks. But it's like 6 months in, if I'm still doing Nicolas Cage, it's not good anymore. It's terrible at that point.
I mean, at that point, you got to go full caster Troy, get the face swap.
Oh, yeah.
You're just going to become Nicolas Cage.
There was a bit where we were just quoting different Nicolas Cage movies. Like, it was, you know, and I did that. I was like, I'm going to take his face off. When I killed
one of the, I don't think it was the big bad evil guy. I think it was like one of his henchmen, but I killed him and I was like, are you familiar with the bard Elton John? 'Cause it's you, you're the Rocket Man. And killed him with like a mind spike or something.
Oh my God, that's so good.
And here I was thinking like you'd go full Abed from Community with like Nick Cage, good or bad. And he loses his mind at the end. Yeah. He spent so much time diving into the brain of Nick Cage.
It is a complex brain to dive into, I will admit. And just, I at one point, I just pulled up, like, quotes of Nicolas Cage, and we're just, like, trying to work him into everything that I was saying and doing. It was a blast, but it was also very tiring to do that voice for, like, 3 hours.
So dramatic.
Worth it, though. Yeah, yes. Now, all I want is one shots now. And I know in a campaign that I have starting this weekend, we've got a few people that are doing like unique character names that might be sort of like this. I've seen in the Discord that there's like a Stevie Kicks and a Hillary Buff and stuff. And they correlate with, you know, with the appropriate race and class and stuff. And so I'm like, man, should we have done celebrity imposter names? Like, did I miss the boat on making just a standard half elf?
Yeah. Honestly, pretty much every NPC I did like, probably maybe 4 months, 5 months into DMing, they were all just rip off of celebrities. That's all I did is just, okay, let's see what celebrity we got today. I highly recommend it. Again, playing a character like that, I don't recommend for an ongoing, but a one shot, oh yeah, Like, most recently on Fateful, one of our guys made, it was basically Macho Man Randy Savage mixed with Hulk Hogan, and it was incredible. Like, he hugged the enemies to death. he was like the FWF World Heavyweight Champion, brother. Like, it was incredible.
Did he cast Creamer?
And he did the cream of the crop, yeah. Bit, though. It was incredible. One of the other guys was a magical boy in the vein of like Sailor Moon, but he was like a big buff dude. So he was like, I'm the moon princess. Like, he was basically doing a Patrick Warburton impression. It was amazing. Like, the one shots for Fateful are the best because they're so ridiculous. Like, the most recently we did The Curse of Nandor. It was What We Do in the Shadows. And like, I was Laszlo, and we had Guillermo, we had Nadja, we had Nandor showed up at the end. So yeah, it was a blast. Again, just to be Matt Berry for like 3 hours and be like, hello, my darling, my good lady wife. Like, it was a blast. I loved it.
And this is why we love D&D so much.
Yeah.
Right? That is fantastic. We're kind of blending the worlds here, because obviously in your D&D life, you're doing a ton of like pop culture voices. So switching over to like the voice acting and the demo reel and things like that, are there any favorite pop culture characters that you like to emulate from time to time?
Ooh, yes. Gandalf from Lord of the Rings is always like a super fun one. I love doing that. So Ian McKellen, Gandalf to be specifically. More specific. I love that. What else pop culture wise do I like to do? Gosh, now I'm blanking.
Put on you on the spot.
On everything that I like to do.
Definitely
Nicolas Cage.
Not Nick Cage. Oh, Nick Cage.
Yeah. Well, it's just fun to do because the way he speaks in general makes like no logical sense at all. Because he'll talk real low like this, and then out of nowhere he'll be like, hey! It's right. Like, yeah. Who said that you could act like that? Like, who was the person that said acting? Yes, that is it.
Yeah. Go from a 2 to a 10, and then back to a 2.
This kid's got it.
Yes. I love doing Solid Snake. Like, that's a favorite thing that I like to do. I'm sure there's more. I just can't think of them off the top of my head now. And I'm going to remember them, like, half an hour from now. So, like, oh, this and this and this.
You do a great job. I know. I was listening through your reel and some of your stuff on your channel and just bouncing from voice to voice. I'm always so envious because I can't do any sort of accents, any sort of anything. And I was really impressed just at how easily it seemed you were just bouncing from voice to voice.
Thank you. It is challenging a bit. I've kind of been doing voices and stuff since I've been doing it longer because I really started trying to like emulate voices. Well, when I was a little kid, I would try and emulate voices and things like that. But when I really started putting like conscious effort into it was playing Metal Gear Solid. Like, so I started working on like my Solid Snake and like Cyborg Ninja and like Revolver Ocelot and Liquid, all those characters I love, because I was just like, this is amazing. This is the greatest thing I've ever seen. But the first time I really remember getting like a reaction, this is so weird. I was like 10 years old, 10 or 11 maybe, and I crashed this girl's birthday party with a friend because he had been invited and I hadn't been, but he was like, you should come to the party and like crash it, because a 10, 11-year-old does that apparently.
Sure.
So I did that, and like I didn't know any of them because they were like the cool kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I just kind of defaulted to the one thing I knew was like, okay, like try and like make them laugh / impress them. So I started doing the Ghostface voice from Scream, because that was like one that I could do. And they were like pulling me around to the different groups. They're like, do the thing. His name is Joey. So I'd be like, hello, Joey. What's your favorite scary movie? Can I curse here? Or
oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
Good. So absolutely. I'd be like, let's hear you, little bitch. Yeah. Like, it just like that sort of stuff. So that was like. That was the first time when I was really like, oh, you people react to this sort of thing. Yeah. So it's been like a journey since like that long.
I love hearing that, like to know that you've kind of found it as a kid, really stuck with it and kind of went on to do it. Now, how did you break into that business?
Well, I'm still trying to break in. So I really it's really been a concentrated effort to say, like, I am going to pursue voice acting. I want to do it professionally. It's been like that 4 years? Yeah, like 4 years or so. I started listening to a podcast that unfortunately isn't happening any longer, but it was called Talkin' Tunes, and it was hosted by Rob Paulson, who is Pinky and he's Pinky from Pinky and the Brain. He's Carl Weezer. Oh, okay. Yeah. He's Yakko Laurinen. You know, he's all those. He's been in the industry for years and years and years and years. And his thing was he loved doing voice work, and he had so many friends in the business that he decided, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to interview them. And it was his interview that he did with Steve Bloom, who's Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop and like a billion other voices. And he did that an interview with Steve, and I was listening to it, and they talked about how Steve had a school, like he did classes and things like that, Bloomvox Studios. So I said, this is it. That's the way. So I took classes with Steve for a while.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow.
And it was really, really cool. It was all online as well, because sure. I obviously don't live in Los Angeles. But
you weren't flying out every week.
Yeah, it was, oh gosh. Yeah, I'm trying to break into this business. Right. You know, I'm rolling deep. I started doing classes with Steve and got like tons of great knowledge and information and like tips on what to do to practice, how to warm up, how to warm down, like things like that. It was more, I guess it was more focused on like how to be a voice actor as opposed to like, well, here's how you put together your reel and here's how you get an agent. Like he kind of would talk about that stuff, but it was more about improving your craft.
Right.
So I really, really enjoyed that and I learned a ton. And just kind of ever since then, it's been get the reel out, start trying to do work. I've done work for Wells Fargo, actually, that I've never heard because that's not how voice acting works, is you do your bit and it goes. I did not get paid for it because I work for Wells Fargo. So, and I also work in close conjunction with a lot of like the producers and the like live events people and things like that. So when one of them found out that I did voice work, hey, come on in. Oh, yeah. We need you. Yeah. So I did a training piece where I was an elderly gentleman closing his savings account. So if you ever happen to hear that, it's me.
Nice.
I just did my grandfather's voice. That's all I did.
Well, so for your unique voices that you pull, do you pull from people you know? That, like, if you're pulling from your grandfather on that one, do you try to emulate pop culture? Like, what's your where's your base?
It depends. It depends on what it calls for. I mean, a lot of times it's me doing like a bad impression of something. That most voice actors, that's what they're doing. Like, for example, Hank Azaria, when he's doing like Lou from The Simpsons, he's doing a lazy impression of Stallone, he says. Zap Brannigan from Futurama is Billy West doing like kind of a Phil Hartman impression. So that's a lot of times what it is just like my take on a voice that's already out there, or I'll look at like the character description, or I'll look at, you know, what are they about? Like, you know, how old are they? Things like that. And I'll just kind of take my normal voice and pitch it up, down, and go from there. So it kind of depends,
yeah.
But most of the time I'm just doing a terrible impression of something else.
Nick Cage after eating gumballs or something.
Yeah, something like that. Like my lazy Nicolas Cage, and from that it'll turn into something else.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never really would have thought about it that way, but yeah, emulating and then turning it into something of your own that can stand out, you know, hearing about some of those iconic characters that we've seen in pop culture for so long, having those types of backgrounds, you know, it's surprising to me from one hand, like, in, you know, to learn it, but then it immediately makes a lot of sense just because, I mean, you can only emulate somebody else. That's the only thing we have when it comes to voice work, right? You know, as far as our reference points and everything is just the conversations we have, the mannerisms of other people.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that there are way more talented voice actors than me that are like, that's not at all how it works, Sonny Jim. But that's how it works for me. I mean, like, one of the voices on my reel is literally the Crypt Keeper mixed with the Joker. Like, that is what I'm doing. I'm doing Mark Hamill Joker mixed with the Crypt Keeper, and that is my scary wizard voice. So yeah, that's usually where it starts for me, though, is like finding a voice that I'm kind of doing a terrible parody of. But it works, I guess.
That's super interesting.
Hire me. I'm available. Please.
At that Mick Arcade.
Back to the plug.
Yeah, back to the plug.
Yes.
No, I think it's really interesting. And when I saw that it was something that you do, I immediately kind of perked up simply from the fact that it's something that we all interact with, we all experience, yeah, whether it's a training or a cartoon or, I mean, video games, name it. There's been voice acting going on for years and years and years. But I really feel like it's something that most people know nothing about.
Yes.
And even as like a nerd that's like interested in a lot of those mediums, I know nothing about voice acting other than there's people that do it.
It is filled with so many incredibly wonderful people that are so like selfless. I mean, I've heard so many stories of different actors going into auditions and say, you know what, who would be really great for this? Not me. So-and-so would be like, and that's unheard of in acting. You know, usually in acting, it's insanely cutthroat and they're, you know, just like, no, there is no other one but me. I'm the only one here. Right. But voice acting, it's not like that because people understand that like, it is kind of more of a smaller, tighter knit group, especially because we're all collectively fighting off the celebrity that's going to get paid to just come in and voice whatever, and sure, they just do their own voice.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, keep the on-camera people out of here. We're ugly. We can do funny voices. Get out of here. That's not true. There's so many incredibly good-looking people in voice acting. It's intimidating, but whatever.
No, but that can make sense, and I can see the difference between, yeah, because if you're a on-camera actor, it's all about your face.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
No matter what they really want to say, at the end of the day, you know, they're essentially getting paid for their face to be shown around to everybody, whereas it's completely the opposite for anybody that's behind that animated character or whatever it may be, so that narration.
Oh, yeah. That was honestly the biggest draw for me with voice acting is because I did, I've done stage acting in my life. I've done short films. I've done like skits. I've done a lot of things on camera, but I really don't. And the irony is that, you know, like, well, Mick, you do Twitch. It's a little different because I'm me for the most part. But voice acting is like, I can never be held back from doing a specific role.
Yeah.
Like if I want to be, hey, we've got this dude. He's like 300 pounds of solid muscle. He's ripped to the bone. It's like, I can do that. And conversely, we have this like little mouse who wears a top hat. I can do that. Like, that's to me it's being able to perform, being able to, you know, it kind of flex that creative muscle, but I'm not held back by the way I look, the, you know, color my hair, if I'm wearing glasses, you know, covered in tattoos, whatever the case may be. Nothing else can hold me back because your voice is the key to whatever you're trying to do. So that's why I love it so much. And really what made me go like, I want to pursue that heavy. Cause I've like my grandmother all the time is like, oh, you're so good. Why don't you do more of the stage work? And it's like, well, one, I want to do like stuff that I wear prosthetics and like monster makeup and stuff if I'm going to do stage or movie work. And two, it's like, what if I, you know, want to do a voice, because that's like easier because I'm lazy. Like, I don't have to memorize lines.
Right.
It's written down for me. I don't have to go stand anywhere because I just sit in a chair. Like, it's the bee's knees of acting.
That's super cool.
Yeah, that's fair too. Like, what would you rather do? Like, have a mic and a camera and a script, or get on stage with makeup and sweat? Like, sweat your balls off.
Exactly.
And unfurl all those lights. Yeah.
Yep. I've done that. I was covered in fake hair and had my hair teased out probably a good foot in high school playing a character of the Hairy Man, which I was just basically doing Macho Man Randy Savage from Spider-Man and Ready to Rumble.
Nice.
Bonesaw. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm going to get you, Wiley. Ooh, yeah. Like, it was great. It was a lot of fun. I actually won an award for it, but spirit gum is gross, and it feels gross when it's on your skin. So, between the two, voice acting or on stage, I'll take the voice acting.
Why not? Why not?
Well, in the variety, I mean, it seems like you could literally bounce from character to character, job to job, whatever it may be, so much easier with voice acting than like, okay, I've got to go spend 6 months of my life, you know, working out, and then 6 months shooting, you know, if you think
about, oh, yeah.
like such a tough life. But you know, you think about Chris Pratt or Evans or any of those guys, like that's like their whole year is one project, and they're stuck.
Hugh Jackman, where he's like, literally all I do is eat and work out.
Yeah,
that's all I do. I'm so tired.
Right. It's,
so yeah, for me, it's I understand why all those guys like want to do the voice acting gigs, because they're like, wait, Chris Pratt in particular, he's like, I just show up and talk. Sign me up. Yeah. Let's go.
Get that Mario money.
Yep. Good for him, though. You know, like good for him. I mean, I was available and they didn't ask, but that's okay. Like, fine, Nintendo, I understand. Let's see if he can go ooh or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know if I've just random tangent. I don't know if I've seen an actor, at least in recent memory, like Chris Pratt, who has gone from like uber beloved to like uber hated, seemingly to like beloved but hated. You know, it's like people just keep back swinging on Chris Pratt. Like, where are we going to land here? You know.
Yep. What do we feel today about Chris Pratt? Do we hate him? Do we love him? What's the verdict?
Let's just bring back Andy Dwyer. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's bring back. Yeah. Let's be done with the green screen movies.
Yeah.
Just get back to Parks and Rec.
Yeah. Just keep it simple again. Get fat again, and then everybody's going to love you.
Yeah. Dad bod Chris Pratt was probably the best. Well, to keep rolling here, you know, we said at the beginning, we don't let anybody come on the show without answering the question, what have you been geeking out on lately? So what's really got your attention lately, Mick?
Man, so many things. In terms of anime, I've been watching Attack on Titan because I hadn't before, and I finally decided to check it out. I've really been enjoying that. I think I'm going through JoJo's Bizarre Adventure like the third time now. I've gotten to Golden Wind again, so once I finish that, like I have to go back to the beginning and watch that again. So watching that, Berserk, because I feel like I'm always watching the Golden Age arc, because it's so good. Video game-wise, I just started up on my channel Final Fantasy VI, so I'll be working through that. I'm also going to work through Final Fantasy XV, because kind of what I'm doing on Twitch is like I'm doing one older game, one newer game.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm doing 6 and 15. Like the first stream of 6 I did, I was dressed as Geralt of Rivia. So
yeah, I saw some of that. I loved it. Yeah,
that was because it was Halloween, and I was like, well, I might get trick or treaters. Spoilers, I didn't. So I basically just sat around as Geralt of Rivia for like 2 hours playing Final Fantasy VI, going, yes, Shadow.
Yeah,
like Gwent. fuck. Like it was a lot of fun. I almost pulled up Gwent and started playing Gwent, but I was like, no, I said I was gonna play 6.
Did your wig work though? I mean, it looks spot on.
It was driving me crazy the entire time. It was so hot and it was thick, and I couldn't scratch the top of my head. I was like, oh, I'm dying here. Oh, this is no good. Fuck. Like, guys, you want to play Gwent? I need to take this wig off. And I had the cat-eyed contacts in too, but they like one of them kept like moving, so it like was cat-eyed completely sideways, so I looked like a goat. But it was a lot of fun to do. I also just got into playing Final Fantasy XIV, and I gotta say, I'm really worried, guys. I'm concerned at how much I am enjoying that game and that experience. Like,
yeah,
I never really understood for the longest time, like people who would get addicted to like World of Warcraft, and they're like, I dropped out of college because I got addicted to World of Warcraft. And like, I got it a little bit. I'm like, oh yeah, video games can be addictive. And now I'm like, oh no. Oh no, I get it now. So, because it's like, I'm not playing 14. I'm thinking about playing it.
Oh yeah, 14 is a animal. Like,
it's...
I was so behind on that, and then last year, like, when the Shadow Keep, I think it was called, expansion came out.
Shadowbringers?
Like, Shadowbringers.
Yeah,
Shadow something. I was like, okay, I'm gonna finally check it out. I bought a, you know, mouse and keyboard for my PlayStation, and downloaded it, and played for probably about 100 hours, and realized that I wasn't even through the original content.
Isn't that amazing? Like,
I wasn't even halfway through the original content.
Yeah, that's the thing that's blown me away the most, is I'm like, you know, because I'll like talk to, because it seems like every one of my friends play it, and it's kind of like, as soon as I announced it,
all of a sudden, I kind of know what, like, I imagine, like, a woman on the internet feels like, because it was like, my DMs exploded. They were like, hey there, handsome. Yeah. See, you're playing Final Fantasy 14. What server are you on there? Yeah. I can run you through any dungeon that you want. And I'm like, do you guys get something if you play with me? Like, what's going on here? So, ladies, I feel your pain. I'm so sorry that you go through this, because... holy shit, everybody blew my DMs up and it was nuts. But playing through the game, it's amazing. And they'll tell me things like, oh yeah, you've got like 80 more hours to go just in this alone. And yeah. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I eventually kind of just gave it up because I didn't have anybody really to play with, but it was just, I was like, I'm too far behind. I was like, I can't keep up with this. But loved every aspect of it. Just
so great.
Wish I would have started years and years ago.
Yeah, so playing a lot of that, trying to think of, I mean, obviously D&D, I think that's about it. Oh, I'm watching The Last Dance on Netflix again, because my wife wanted to watch it, which was awesome. And any chance I get to watch Michael Jordan be a complete sociopath, I'll take. It's incredible, you know. Anytime he's like, you know, so-and-so said to me, good game. And I took that personally.
Yeah.
And then he
yeah.
puts like 60 points on the dude the next game. It's just Michael, for reference, Michael Jordan's from my hometown. So he's like God to people from Wilmington.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love seeing the non-Space Jam Michael Jordan, the real Michael Jordan. Because realistically, like, he would have been screaming at Bugs and Daffy at halftime in that game against the Monstars. Like, he would have been given Elmer Fudd shit about having terrible defense. Like, you know, so that's what I want. Show me the Last Dance version of Space Jam. That's the that's the sequel that we really need. Not the one with LeBron. No, give me pissed off Michael Jordan.
He's in debt to Sylvester, like $30,000 from playing
exactly.
Foster Quarter in the locker room.
Right. Yeah, he's got to go pick up Yosemite Sam from like Vegas or something.
Yeah,
that was like my best bit. Like, oh yeah, Mike, I'm sure they had to twist your arm to go get Rodman from Vegas. Right. But you stop by the tables while you're there. Huh? Yeah. Nah, it's such a good documentary, though. I guess that counts as geeking out over it, right?
It was a good one, yeah.
Yeah, and it's always, yeah, always worth a rewatch, I think. So many people out there like have those shows that they always go back to. So I think it's totally fair to say you're geeking out on an older show for the 80th time. Like, why not?
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, as a Hornets fan, like, we've never really had that moment outside of like the 95-96 season where we were good, which I just want to point out that that's how you know that the Hornets were like truly the best team in the NBA at the time, because the Monstars took two of the Hornets players' abilities.
That's a good point.
It's true.
That is
true.
Yeah, just so you know, just saying.
The Monstars in every starter jacket out there. That's yes. how you know the Hornets were big.
That's true.
That, I mean, even as a grown man and as an adult now in the year of our Lord 2021, I'm like, would not hate one of those Hornets starter jackets from the 90s.
I would totally wear. Would you go zip up or pull over?
I gotta go to the zip up, you know.
Zip, to let it breathe, let it breathe.
Exactly, you know, and then you can do the ultimate 90s move and tie it around the waist.
That's true. Yeah. I think I'm partial to the kangaroo pouch.
That is true. That is the benefit of the pullover for sure. Now I'm thinking about that jacket.
Totally derailed, yeah. Not where we expected to go on nerdy topics, but like, no, let's just talk starter jackets and the 95 Hornets.
Yeah, the 95-96 Hornets. Lonzo Mourning, Larry Johnson, Muggsy Bowes. I love those great Ma commercials, too.
If you would have told somebody in like the mid to late 90s that starter would not have been a thing in like 10 years, nobody would have believed you.
I would have called you a liar. Like, it's one of those things that, like, I would have felt buying stock in Starter was the right thing.
Right? Yeah.
You know, it's like, nah, that's not this Google, not this Amazon, Starter. Every kid wants this jacket, and they were gone.
Well, no, it's interesting because they made, like, all the apparel that everybody wanted, but I don't know if they ever had, like, any of the licensing to do, like, on-field or on-court jerseys. You know, like, it was still always Reebok or Nike. Yeah. But yet, Starter,
you're kind of like, wait a minute.
Starters had all the apparel, though, at the time.
Yeah, I think all their warm-up stuff was basically Starter. I think. Yeah. I could be wrong.
Maybe that's what it was. They had, like, the warm-up gear.
You guys lost it. Nobody's seeing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're telling me tearaway pants weren't super popular just in everyday life?
Right. Only for male strippers.
They would be today. They totally would be today with all the work from home, though.
So I would buy a pair of tearaway. I kind of been wanting to get a pair of tearaway pants for a while just because I feel like it could be that much more dramatic when I'm trying to like make a point to my wife or something like that. Like I walk into the living room. She's like, will you take the dog out? I just rip them off. I'm like, you take the dog out. I just feel like it'll drive home my point every time.
It's true. There's no more emphatic way to make your point than to rip your pants off.
I mean, that's like how half of like 90s wrestling happened.
Like, true.
You think about like The Rock, like all of his original Rock bits, he was wearing those snap on track pants and it was just, and then he's ready to go.
I actually, it's funny you say that. I just saw a clip of him. I think it was the Mania in Dallas where he came out with the flamethrower.
Oh, yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
That was the thing. That was the move, apparently. Yes. And he's like, The Rock is here to do a match. And he like rips the pants off and he's got like his elbow pads like stuffed in the front of his trunks. Yep. And I was like, that we could have really Rock. That was the move.
He was ready to go, though, you know.
It was good stuff. And he set like the record for the quickest match in WrestleMania history, like 6 seconds or so. He just hits a rock bottom and pins him. And that was it.
Eric Rowan, I think.
Yep. Yeah. I was like, oh, that was good for his career, right?
Yeah, right.
Hey, he went on to have spiders in boxes and then fade into nothing.
Yep. And he can't even get hired at AEW. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
True.
Tough break.
True.
Tough break.
Ah, we could talk wrestling. I didn't realize. Yes. Are you a wrestling guy?
I am a literal lifelong wrestling fan.
Love it. That is awesome.
Lifelong. It's kind of like the video game question. It's like, I don't remember a point in time in my life in which wrestling and video games were not a part of it.
So you've been following AEW. I'm going to go here then if we're going to talk, bring it up. So you follow AEW then?
I have. I think Tony Khan needs to shut his stupid mouth because he sounded like an idiot. Shut up, Tony. Just make good wrestling. Stop. Stop talking.
He is funny. I call him Little Rick Moranis.
I call him Big Tony in the style of like, okay, this is like really obscure. So in Pumping Iron, Arnold Schwarzenegger goes to Venice Beach and he walks into the gym and he's like, hello, you know, I'm here about looking to build some muscles. And there's this dude like standing at the counter and he's like huge. And Arnold sees him and he's like, hey, Big Tony. And out of nowhere, this dude just starts going, like, and everything Arnold says, that is what this dude does. It's just, and it's like, my man, do me a favor. Take two steps back because you're standing on Arnold's nuts right now, and I need you to move backwards. So that's why I call Tony Khan Big Tony, because it makes that's me laugh because he's a very small man.
Yeah.
Or TK. Yeah. My brother calls him TK.
TK.
That's funny.
He's a promoter, man. Promoter's got to promote.
He's doing something. I don't know. Yeah, so if he was doing a character, I'd be like, yes, talk your shit, Tony Khan. Talk about how like some magical demo matters in the world of 2021 where Vince McMahon got paid
24.
Yeah, $2 billion for streaming rights. Yeah, right. But that demo matters. But like, talk your shit. I don't think he's playing a character, though. So that's I think he's just, Tony, come on, buddy. Like, come on.
Always like the least threatening guy.
He really
like
is.
When you look at him, like there's nothing threatening about Tony Khan. So when like anytime he even gets to talking a little bit, you're like, I don't know. Like Vince would just pick you up and body slam you.
Yeah, he would just snap you in half. I've watched Vince McMahon take so much damage over the years. Tony, don't do it. I'm waiting for him to. What he really should do is just embrace like the ultimate flex and just rip off literally everything Eric Bischoff did. Like do the motorcycle bit in the ring. Like it's so good to be the demo king. Like I love it, but apparently he doesn't want to do that. But hey, you know it's okay. I appreciate what they're doing down in AEW for sure. I actually wanted to be a professional wrestler when I graduated high school. But unfortunately, I'm not 6'3" and 250 pounds of muscle. So
Yeah,
that's the life, right? In that era of our era of coming out of high school, if you weren't Ryback, you weren't going to make it.
Yeah,
just wasn't going to happen.
There was not a large demand in the mid 2000s for a 6'125 pound dude who didn't have abs. Like,
I'm sure maybe I could have gotten, you know, a match somewhere, but it's probably nowhere I wanted to be.
I think about it all the time. I'm like, I wish I'd become a wrestler. I was just 4 inches and 100 pounds short.
Yep.
Or 20 years before the acceptance of people like Jungle Boy as legit contenders, you know?
That's true. You know, I missed the boat. I always say, like, I would go be an independent wrestler now and just do, like, nothing except talk and take, like, one bump in a match. And I'm like, I guarantee you I'd get my ass to AEW in 6 months. Because I would just go out and talk and just run the entire time and just have, like, an intense character and be like, that's right, Tony, give me that AEW money, buddy.
Be good on there the
you
break. Go.
Yeah, you could just be like a manager.
There you go.
You just have to get one item to hold.
Yep.
And you're in a flashy suit. You're good to go.
I'll just be like the anti-Jim Cornette. Like, that's what I'll be.
Yes.
I'll just walk around and being like, the problem with wrestling today is people with muscles and who are tall. And we need more flips. There's not enough flips. Like, just be literally the anti-Jim Cornette. And there you go. That's how you succeed in wrestling today.
Instead of having a tennis racket, bring a basketball. There you go.
Yeah. Go out there and spin it into a tricks.
I was thinking the badminton racket, you know?
Oh, that would, yeah, that's Shuttle even better. Cup. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Well, before we jump off there, just because it's coming up right around the corner, do you have any predictions on Hangman Page versus Kenny Omega?
I mean, I feel like if you don't have Hangman win, you've wasted everyone's time. Although the other side of that coin, I think having him be your world champion is the guaranteed way to kill that dude's career. I hate to say, so I have actually seen Adam Page wrestle for a long time because he worked for a long, long time with one of the local promotions in Charlotte, PWX. Like, he was a part of a tag team there called Country Jacked, and he never talked once. Ever
really?
In PWX, not once, never cut a promo. He was always the dude like standing there just looking like mad. His partner would talk. They paired him with like Steve Corino and Gunner from Impact Wrestling. Like, Hangman never talked at all. I think he's a fantastic wrestler. I just think in this day and age, particularly when you look at AEW, when you have guys like CM Punk coming in, guys like Bryan Danielson, guys like Miro, you have so many guys who are fantastic on the microphone. Chris Jericho,
right?
You know, Kenny Omega even has like his style, Cody Rhodes. Like, you have to be able to talk as a world champion. Like, that's a thing for really great success. You need to be able to cut that promo. I'm not saying he can't cut like a fiery promo or do it good. I've never seen anything that shows me that he can do it consistently. So I hope I'm wrong. Because I think largely majority of the AEW fan base doesn't care as much about that. But the downside with a lot of like the hardcore AEW fans is they're very much like, okay, I've seen it. Now what? Like, what's next? So I'm afraid it's like he isn't going to bring enough to keep people interested and intrigued. And it's literally like he's going to get the belt. How long before we start hearing the, well, when is Danielson gonna get it? When is Punk gonna get it?
Yeah.
You know, like those guys showed up and it was instantly like CM Punk should be wrestling for the title right now. And it's like, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That I think yes, he will / should win, because the story's kind of built towards that. But I'm very concerned for it when it happens, just because I know that puts me in minority, because I know there's a lot of folks who are very much like in the core, Hangman is the dude, and I'm like, I watched him work programs in ROH with Jay Lethal and Jay Briscoe, and he couldn't, you know, get over with those two guys. And it's like, that's a problem.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah. Your world champion needs to be able to do it both, like talk and wrestle. He needs to be able to go on TV shows. He needs to be able to represent the entire company.
He needs to have a character more so than I'm a drunk, which
yeah,
I saw him do that in Scott Hall. It didn't work out so well.
Yeah, I do think they need to take him, you know, a couple tweaks, and I think he'd be okay. I agree with you. If Danielson and CM Punk weren't now in the picture, I think 100% smash, like, Adam Page would win this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not smashing Kenny Omega, but just, like, guaranteed he would end up winning it because of the build. But I feel like now, if he does win, it's going to end up just being, like, a short run, because Danielson or somebody's going, like, they're doing that tournament at the same time.
Yeah.
And I find it hard to believe that one of those two aren't going to win that. And so then you got this situation where, like, neither of them can lose to an Adam Page in a title fight, I feel. So,
yeah.
The only other aspect I'm kind of thinking in my head, and this is going to play into some of the great, you know, Daniel Bryan memes, but maybe, just maybe, Omega and Page don't finish. Like, it goes to DQ or something. And then
I could see that.
And then Danielson wins the tournament, and then we get the classic, you know, Bryan Danielson interjecting into a three-way match.
Yep, yeah.
And then maybe that's where. So you kind of protect Page. Omega, you know, doesn't get quite as diminished from the loss, and Danielson ends up the champ.
Yeah, I have had a very large bone to pick with AEW since almost the inception. So what did Scorpio Sky do to piss Tony Khan off that this dude has constantly it's been punished? Like, good Lord, what happened? I've been banging my fist on the table for so long to be like, why is Scorpio Sky never like anything? Why has he never been a champion at all?
Oh, he was SCU tag champ originally.
Oh, great. So, yeah, but that definitely did something for his singles. Yeah. I'm kidding. Yeah.
No, I know where you're coming from there.
Yeah. Him and it's three guys. Scorpio Sky, Pentagon Jr., Rey Fénix. How those dudes have not done more than just, like, they've been tag champs is beyond me. Rey Fénix is, like, one of the most insanely innovative guys that is in wrestling right now. And it's like, well, I'm glad he's tagging with his brother. I hope he enjoys that. I mean, Pentagon Jr. was like fucking Sub-Zero in Lucha Underground. Like, that was his character. He literally was Sub-Zero. Like, he had the master, and he was breaking dudes' arms, and it's like, build a company around him. Just have him come out and start breaking dudes' arms. It's fine. So I've had that bone to pick. I'm like, Tony. And don't get me wrong, like, Kenny Omega is legitimately one of my favorite wrestlers, and has been for since like his DDT days.
Yeah.
But come on.
Do you think the EVPs are factoring in there?
Well, I mean, when you look across like the history of wrestling, typically the guys who have a little bit of backstage power, that translates to what we've seen on our screens. And, well, none of the EVPs have looked too bad in any capacity at all. Like, Cody Rhodes wrestles a guy who's been wrestling for 2 weeks, and apparently it's the most epic feud match you've ever seen. He's got, like, horses carrying him to the ring, and, like, shit's on fire, and it's like, Ogogo has literally wrestled two matches ever.
Yeah.
What are you doing? So, I don't know. I do think that is something that kind of, you know, comes up to the surface of AEW, which I get it. You know, I'd do the same thing too if I had a wrestling company.
Yeah.
Put me and my buddies over. Like, what else are you going to do with wrestling?
Well, and it's tough because, and I've said this for a while, as weird as it is, like, they need more screen time. Like, they just flat out have too big of a roster already, and they have for a little bit with, so it, I mean, they just have got the same problem as WWE does, and you don't have enough screen time. And even though I think they were smart with the YouTube channels with Dark and Elevation and using that to give some of the newer talent, younger talent, more indie talent, whatever you want to call them, you know, opportunities to still get in front of fans was smart. But even as like as a more diehard wrestling fan as I am, I never go out and watch that, you know? So you're talking about really a niche group of people that are even seeing Dark and Elevation and those types of things. So I really think that they've got to figure it out, because there's just way too many people. And even like Miro, like, I like Sammy Guevara, but like, it killed me that Miro dropped the TNT championship there, because he is on such a good level. He's just so funny the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
But like, now where do you go with him? Like, he can't go jump into this mix of the AEW championship just yet, because he would dominate everybody per kind of the storylines, you know? So
yeah,
it's a good problem to have, but it's a problem.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I always kind of laugh, because I'm a pro wrestling fan. I'm not like, I'm a WWE guy.
Right,
or I'm an No, I'm a pro wrestling fan. I want good pro wrestling, and I want everybody to succeed, because that's just going to make everything better. But I agree, it's an issue with, you're not getting an opportunity to see the kind of guys that you need to see when you need to see them. And for example, we saw, you know, it was Sammy Guevara and I think Jungle Boy in the initial TNT tournament
that they did belt?
Yeah.
Like, why the hell did Cody Rhodes? Yeah. Why did Cody Rhodes win that? That should have been any young guy. It should have been either Sammy Guevara or Darby Allin should have won it initially and then let them do their thing instead of Cody, because it's like, well, Cody doesn't need that.
Yeah.
Right,
you know, Miro doing it did something because, like, he is a killer. He's giant. He's a total package in terms of he can talk. He can. He's a great wrestler. He's got his character figured out. But it's just one of those things where it's like, well, the EVP's got to have their time. And, you know, that eats up a ton of time, though. And it's like, then you take a guy like a Malakai Black who's doing some of the coolest stuff I'm seeing in wrestling, like, the mask and the music and the entrance and the character and everything he's doing is amazing. Okay, he's going to be on Dark now because he did his time and lost to Cody. So we're not going to have him go against Sammy because that wouldn't really make any sense. So see ya. Like Andrade, same thing.
That mid-card needs to iron out a little bit. Yeah, and Cody's a problem. Like I think I said a while back, Kyle, like we were talking about an AEW pay-per-view or something, and I was like, and up next, you know, is the weekly who's Cody going to put over match type deal. And that's himself. All it's really been. Well, yeah, exactly. But exactly.
That's, I mean, that's who really, he's putting over.
Right. But that's like all it is. And so it's empty. Whereas why don't we see somebody like a Miro face a Malakai Black and let that be a feud for a few months? Like that's something I think fans could really care about and get behind without a belt being online or whatever it may be. You know, God's favorite champion versus essentially like House of Satan. Like, come on. That's that's like written for itself right there, right? You know?
Yeah. Admittedly, I'm actually shocked Cody Rhodes didn't go full like Shawn Michaels against The Undertaker, where he comes out in like the white hat and he's like, you know, because I was like, that's what he's going to do. Like, it just felt like that's what he was building to. But instead, he comes out dressed like Homelander and then doesn't understand why he gets booed. I'm like, Cody.
Yeah.
It's not hard to understand.
Look at what you've done here.
Yeah.
Well, with this bloated roster, where are you thinking Bray Wyatt's going to land? Like Wyndham Rotunda, do you want to see him go to AEW? Do you feel like they're already jam-packed?
I want to see him go to Impact.
Yeah.
Because I think he can do a lot of really good things for Impact. I've been saying for a long time, you know, because it's like a guy leaves WWE and everybody's like, oh, so-and-so to AEW confirmed. I'm like, AEW has people.
Yeah.
It's like they have too many people. I mean, you're seeing it in a way where like a Brian Cage came in, was a big deal for 5 seconds, done, not even on TV hardly. You know, Lance Archer's a similar way before his unfortunate passing. Brody Lee was in a very similar situation too, where it's like he came in, like, did nothing,
right?
And they have that, like, I don't know if it's like the new toy problem. So I would really love to see more guys go to Impact Wrestling, because, I mean, when you look at Impact, that roster is basically bare. Like, when they're like, Eddie Edwards is the heart and soul of Impact, I'm like, well, you guys need a transplant, because this is not going to work. You need something else. Like, Moose is there, and he's incredible, but he's got to have somebody to work with. Got to have somebody.
Yeah, you'd almost like to see a little bit more. They've done a little bit, right? Christian went over there recently.
Yeah.
And he obviously had won the belt. But you'd almost like to see them do a little bit more the other way to maybe take care of some of those guys and give them more wrestling opportunities. I've been telling Kyle, I've been catching up. I was never a big Impact guy, but now that it's on Pluto TV, there's like a whole channel just for Impact.
Really?
And TNA.
Yeah.
I put it on constantly. Like when I'm on my bike and stuff like that, like I'll just throw it on and they catch you up on the recent stuff. So I'm kind of more invested in Impact than I really ever was.
It's actually way better than people realize. But again, it's just the problem of like, there's nobody there. Like there, and it's so blatantly obvious. And like the guys they do have, you're like, man, this guy is good, but he doesn't have like the guy he needs to work with.
Right.
Like
Brian
Myers. I'm a huge fan of what Brian Myers is doing, but it's like, but where's that young baby face that he can work with and be that villain to? And they don't have it really. Like Josh Alexander, I guess, but, you know, I think you need more than that.
Yeah, they're capable of putting on great matches at times. Like Alexander comes to mind. He had that recent program with TJ Perkins.
Oh, yeah, TJP.
Yeah. He was at WWE and they went over. Capable of amazing matches, not really memorable at all on the mic, and nothing going on really with him to make you care. So, like, I love kind of catching these individual spots from Impact, but other than that, like, you could just put the show on mute.
pretty much.
Yeah.
I will say that they may handle and have traditionally handled like women's wrestling better than anybody. Like they were doing stuff before anybody else was doing it, you know, so I tend to like a lot of stuff that they do there for their women because they give their women a ton of opportunities. But now that's where I want to see a lot of guys go. Like, I think Buddy Murphy, it's like rumored he's possibly going to Impact, and I think he's going to kill it there because he looks like they took a shrink ray and shot Triple H from like 1999 and just he shrunk down a little bit because he's so incredible. Like, that guy's good. And just because I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, my brother actually works for 2K on WWE. So,
nice.
Yeah. Yeah, he works. He is the AI gameplay designer for WWE 2K22.
So can we get on the early access?
if I can swing it, I'm not even on an early access. Yeah. But
so how do we get in on that beta?
Yeah, right.
Something like that.
Be a tester.
I'll talk to my people. he's gonna hear this and be like, "What the hell are you doing, telling people?"
All of a sudden, his DMs just start blowing up. Like,
yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Hey man, how can I get one of those codes?
He's gonna be like, "We don't even have a beta." But yeah, very very proud of him. His journey in working in games has been great. I mean, he worked on Destiny 2. He worked on Infamous Second Son was the first game that he worked on. He worked on the Britney Spears mobile game. He worked on the Nicki Minaj mobile game.
Now we're getting serious.
So yeah, nah, this is how you know it's serious. He worked on the Jason Statham mobile game.
That's awesome, though. No, that's
heavy hitter in the family.
Maybe we'll have to circle back when 2K22 comes out.
Absolutely.
Catch up and see if it's much better than the last one was.
Well, he didn't work on the last one, so we can't. Okay. I can't. Yeah, he did not. Yeah. That had nothing to do with him.
Does he say that when he talks to people? It's like, "Oh, I'm working on the new WWE 2K one, but yeah. I didn't do the last one. I didn't do the last one."
Yeah, he's like, "No, I didn't get hired for that one. They didn't hire me then."
And that's why it sucked.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to make it way better. It's going to be awesome.
No pressure. Well, good stuff, man. Well, I think that'll about do it for us here, but you want to give a last shout out to where folks can find you?
Absolutely. So I'm everywhere on the internet, Twitter/MickArcade, Twitch, MickArcade, Instagram, @MickArcade. I'm on YouTube as well. Again, if you go to the Twitter, it's in the link tree. It'll direct you there because unfortunately, I don't have enough subscribers to have like a MickArcade, you know, URL that it'll take you to. So it's like a bunch of random characters and numbers and things like that. But if you go to my link tree, it'll navigate you there. And that's
find it there.
Yeah, and that's where you can find my vocal reel. I am currently available if you'd like to book me for any of your vocal needs, whatever that may be.
See, Kyle, we needed Mick last season or season one when we did the Polybius script, and we were doing our own quote-unquote voice acting, but instead of trying to emulate anything, we just put filters on all of it. And
if it works, it works. I always tell people, voice acting isn't always like changing your voice. It's just delivering a performance.
Yeah.
Sure. You know? And so if you can deliver the performance, that's all that really matters. Even if the voice is yourself, but you can deliver a compelling performance, that's all that matters.
Next time around, we'll know who to hire.
Yeah, I am available.
Well, thank you, Mick, for joining us. And for all those out there, remember to stay saucy.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this discussion, go ahead and smash the subscribe button so you never miss a chapter of Geek Ketchup, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to follow GK on social media. You can find links to all of our accounts on the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even links to our merch store and Patreon if you'd like to support the show. But as always, remember to stay saucy, you nerds.